This is Mishmash, a weekly conversation where we try to unjumble an important and sometimes under-the-radar statewide story that affects you. I'm Shayna Roth. Will car insurance rates rise after the newest limitations on the state's no-fault law? This is the question Lauren Gibbons of Bridge, Michigan is here with me to tackle. Lauren, welcome back to Mishmash.
Thanks for having me.
So Lauren, the Michigan Supreme Court came down with a new ruling on Monday. Let's start with just what the court said and the changes it made to our previous understanding of this law.
Yeah, so basically the no-fault insurance law that Governor Gretchen Whitmer and the then Republican majority legislature agreed to in 2019 essentially made a lot of changes. The part that is affected by the Supreme Court decision is specifically the medical fee schedule that providers are allowed to charge back and get reimbursed for insurance companies when they're caring for auto accident victims. They have argued for a long time that that fee schedule is not fair to them. It's driving them out of business. It's preventing auto crash survivors from getting that care. And so a couple of those survivors went to court to try and get that overturned, at least for the drivers that were injured prior to the law's passage. And they argued that it was a retroactivity issue. And the majority opinion did side with them on that. They said that because their contracts kicked in before the law passed, that means that their auto insurance policies have to adhere to what was in place before that law went into effect.
Lauren, you wrote in a piece for Bridge, Michigan, quote, "The Supreme Court's decision marks a victory for thousands of people with severe and long-term injuries from crashes who have long argued the changes to medical fees interrupted their access to high-quality care." Talk us through what you mean there.
So as I mentioned, a lot of these car crash survivors were having a really hard time finding providers who were willing to take them on. Some of the people that had been caring for them for months or years or even decades in some cases had to come back to them and say, "We can't afford taking care of you anymore. We're losing money." And so a lot of survivors came forward publicly and said, "This is really hindering my access to care." Some of them were being put into the hospital system or into nursing homes, which providers have argued doesn't necessarily fit the bill for some of the auto accident victims. Obviously, some of them are younger. Some of them have needs that wouldn't necessarily be served in a nursing home setting. So a lot of them have said this puts them at a disadvantage because they were promised full access to long-term care under the no-fault law, and they were no longer getting it.
Lauren, talk us through who the critics of the court's decision are. Who are they and what are they saying?
Yeah, so the biggest critics of the Supreme Court's decision would be the insurance providers who were fighting against this. They argue that the no-fault law itself and the changes that going back to it were supposed to significantly bring down Michigan's skyrocketing auto insurance costs. Now, they say that including these medical fees and including the people who were injured prior to the law's passage was a key factor in ensuring that those rates went down. So they're arguing that the rates are going up. Now, on the other side of the coin, there are people who are very supportive of what the decision means for the people pre-2019. But they're still concerned that it doesn't apply to people moving forward. One provider I talked to said that this would be a slow death for providers, for people with traumatic brain injuries sustained through auto accidents, because even if they can afford to pay and care for the auto accident survivors from pre-2019, eventually through attrition, they won't be able to afford the new patients coming in. So they're definitely on the more supportive side of what the Supreme Court did. They see that as a step in the right direction. But the real critics, of course, remain the insurance providers who supported the fee schedule change.
Do the insurance providers have any recourse at this point, or is this finally like, this is what's happening?
Yeah, this is the Supreme Court's decision. That's their interpretation of the law. So unless the law was changed and there was a new legal question, this is how the law is interpreted now.
Is there any talk about changing the no-fault law? I know that, as you mentioned earlier, this was a bipartisan effort, but a lot of the or at least some of the people that were a part of that bipartisan effort are not in office anymore. Is there discussion about new laws surrounding no fault?
Sure. Now, the main push for changes to the no fault law at this stage have been the people, the providers, the survivors of auto accidents who want to see the fee schedule changed significantly from what it is currently. So those would be the people who, by and large, supported the Supreme Court's decision this week. We have not seen in recent years insurance providers pushing for major changes to the law. They have, by and large, supported the fee schedules, especially they've touted some of the gains in terms of car insurance savings. And it's important to note that the big piece of the auto insurance law that allows people to choose their level of personal injury protection coverage, that it remains in place, that wasn't affected by the Supreme Court decision. And no one's really talking about changing that piece of the law. Where the fight will continue to be now, there are some lawmakers who have expressed sympathy or support for changing the fee schedule. Insurance companies have been very against that. So I think as it was in 2018, 2019, when these negotiations were happening, it was and will continue to be a very contentious issue legislatively.
New from the Embedded podcast. Female athletes have always needed grit and talent. But for decades, they've also needed a certificate.
There was chit-chat about, is that really a woman?
And even now, they're still being checked and questioned. Their story is the newest series from CBC and NPR's Embedded. It's called Tested. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Walk us through some of the history of why no fault has become such a, as you said, contentious issue in the state legislature. Why is this something that various lawmakers continue to make their sort of pet issue?
Yeah, so Michigan for decades had a very robust no-fault policy where if someone was catastrophically injured in a car accident, if they were covered by car insurance, they would be covered for the remainder of their life for any care that comes from that. Now, obviously, catastrophic accidents are not super common, thankfully, but obviously the care is very costly. And Michigan has an organization or association, excuse me, called the Michigan Catastrophic Claims Association. That's a separate entity that handles all of the funding, pools together the insurance money to essentially pay for people's care when they're put in these positions. And the reason it got so contentious and people had been trying to change that for a long time prior to the 2019 law is because Michigan's car insurance rates have historically been the highest in the nation, particularly in the Metro Detroit area. Now, we have seen since 2019 some reductions to auto insurance, primarily if people have chosen to take a lower level of coverage than unlimited no fault. But there are still areas of the state, including Metro Detroit, particularly the city of Detroit, where auto insurance rates remain high. So there was a lot of contention when the 2019 changes were going through the legislature. There's still a lot of contention. There has been since it passed. And as I said, yeah, that's not going away. There's still a lot of disagreement on the best path forward for Michigan's auto insurance policy.
How does Michigan's auto insurance now stack up against other states? Are we doing a similar thing to what other states do? Are we kind of on an island by ourselves? How are we looking compared to our neighbors?
It's still pretty unique because Michigan's no-fault policy was so unique in the first place. We continue to have an unlimited no-fault option. A lot of drivers are still taking that option. The fee schedule does fall in line with what some other states do, but it is still a pretty singularly complicated system, although it has started to fall a little bit more in line with what other states have been doing. How we compare in terms of premiums, it has gone down somewhat. I think the most recent estimate I saw from a company that typically compares auto insurance rates, I think Michigan is about fourth in the nation now, as opposed to first.
Let's move on before we head out to the issue of false electors in Michigan, which continues to make headlines. What is the latest there?
Yeah, so we have seen in recent weeks a number of Trump supporters and the electors that supported him in the 2020 election, even after now President Joe Biden won the election in Michigan, are starting to see some legal action, some legal issues. Several of the 16 people who were charged in the false electors scheme by Attorney General Dana Nessel have or will soon be arraigned in court, including former GOP co-chair Meshawn Maddock. And in addition to that, we've started to see others start facing legal troubles, including Attorney Matt DiPerno, former Attorney General candidate, former Representative Dare Rendon. They're charged with separate criminal charges that involve vote machine tampering. And certainly we've also seen additional criminal charges levied against former President Trump himself. So there's a lot of legal activity going on, at least in Michigan, for those 16 electors and DiPerno and Rendon. They're at the early stages. They were very recently charged and are just starting to see some court activity. So still a long way to go before we see how those pan out.
Obviously, a lot of people are thinking towards the 2024 election. Former President Donald Trump has declared his candidacy, and he continues to be the front runner for the Republican Party. Lauren, how are things looking in Michigan? I know 2024 seems like a long ways away. You and I both know it's really not in the election swing of things. How are things looking for Republicans right now?
Yeah, 2024 is getting closer every day. I think the big challenge for Republicans right now is going to be fundraising. They have had some issues at the state GOP level. The party is now run by Christina Caramo, former Secretary of State candidate from 2022. They have not been posting the numbers one might expect at this point to launch successful down the ticket races. We haven't seen huge names come forward for the open U.S. Senate race, for example. There's a couple of people who've expressed interest and could come out at this point, but there's a big money discrepancy right now. We've seen a lot of robust fundraising efforts from Governor Gretchen Whitmer, for example, a lot of down the ticket fundraising. One bright spot for Republicans does appear to be fundraising for state house races. They have they've been posting competitive numbers for some of those contentious state house seats, which could impact how close the race for the House majority becomes in Michigan. But in terms of presidential race, it's going to be really interesting to see how much money national Republicans choose to put into Michigan. Whether the ultimate candidate, whether it's former President Trump or someone else in the primary right now, how much time and energy they put into winning Michigan voters over. There's still a lot that remains to be seen, but I do think 2024 is a different landscape than it was in 2020.
Talk me through more about that, how it is a different landscape, because I know I've been seeing a lot of people calling 2024 the zombie election because it maybe will be Trump versus Biden again. How is the landscape different?
Yeah, I think a lot of people it certainly saw the fallout of the 2020 election and are hoping to move away from that. You know, you've seen a number of prominent Republicans. I think former Representative Fred Upton is one example of someone who is hoping for a different outcome than Trump versus Biden in 2024. So you're starting to see more public disagreement with the direction of the Republican Party under former President Trump. And will that matter to primary voters or in the primary system this time around? That remains to be seen. But I do think there's more public discontent and some interest in moving the GOP in a different direction. And I think on the Democratic side, certainly, especially a lot of younger voters would like to see someone who's a little more in tune with their needs than President Biden. Although that said, President Biden saw a lot of support in Michigan, a lot of he's got some strong supporters. And as mentioned, Governor Whitmer has been doing a lot of fundraising for him. So I think, Biden probably sees Michigan as a good opportunity, especially with Democrats in power right now. But I do think it's important to note that Michigan on the ground level is still pretty politically purple. There's a lot of both parties represented in different regions of the state. And it's always going to be an interesting state to watch at the presidential level.
Lauren Gibbons is a reporter for Bridge Michigan. Lauren, it's always such a pleasure to have you here on Mishmash.
Always great being here. Thanks for having me.
Mishmash is produced by WDET, Detroit's NPR station. This episode was produced by myself, Shayna Roth, and the always fantastic Hearns Laguerre Jr. Our news director is Jerome Vaughn, and our podcast manager is David Lyons. Our digital team is Dave Kim and Sophia Joswiak, with additional help from Jack Philbrandt. As always, if you listen to this podcast and you want to support it, you can do so. Just go online and leave us a review. Or if you really, really like this podcast, and we really hope you do, you can support WDET by going to wdet.org/give. Again, that's wdet.org/give. Without your support, programs like Mishmash are really not possible. Thanks again for listening. We'll talk to you next week.